This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein to comment on a recent Supreme Court decision of major import for those of us who played high school football. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District 2022. Richard, a good evening to you. This turns on a high school coach at Bremerton High School, Bremerton, Washington, on the Puget Sound. A high school coach having the custom of praying with some of his players or all of his players after a game. It reminds me of praying before a game and after a game in Pennsylvania in the 1960s. It was a status symbol to be part of that circle. When you were a young ball player, the big guys got to be in with the coach as we were thanking the Lord that no one was injured. That's why we prayed. However, that was then. This is now. As I understand it, the Supreme Court decision turns on the question of the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District. The majority decision written by Justice Gorsuch, the dissenting opinion written by Sotomayor. What is the large story here that was the contest between Gorsuch and Sotomayor? Good evening to you.
Yes, hi. This is a very unusual case because what happens is the entire relationship between the coach and the school varied over a period of time. What happened is for many years, from about 2008 to about 2015, he did all of this stuff and nobody paid any attention to him one way or the other, including all the officials in the school district. Then some neighboring coach calls up the principal and says, hey, I want you to understand just how wonderful it is that Coach Kennedy does all this stuff. And by this time, somebody in the superintendent's office just said, oh my God, we have a serious problem that we have to worry about here. And they put forward what I regard as an utterly preposterous claim that somehow or other, if we allow this poor coach to play with his players, it's going to expose us to liability for a violation of the Establishment Clause. I could not begin to think of what that theory of liability would look like, or why anybody would care to bring it, or why after 7 years it's a problem. But they then said, ah, the fear of liability means that we then have to negotiate with you and change the way in which you do things. So if you want to pray, you can pray, but you have to go into a closed room and don't let anybody see what's going on. So we then get two cases. The case that Justice Gorsuch decides is a very narrow one, and it essentially says if somebody prays by himself after a game on a public field at the 50-yard line, he is not representing the institution. It's his own personal business, so it's not an establishment. Justice Sotomayor, what she says, look at the past history of this, and what she does, in her opinion, is puts a bunch of pictures there showing the coach in an earlier incarnation with players of opposite teams, families, and so forth, praying at the midline. So she says this is an organized activity. Well, are we talking about the record, which was narrow, or are we talking about the experience, which was broad? It's very hard to figure this out. And so here's what's essentially what went on. Justice Sotomayor lost. She couldn't win and persuade any of the conservative justices, but she's laying in wait, because the moment it turns out you get another case coming up in which it's not the stylized facts that Justice Gorsuch emphasizes, but in fact is a collaborative effort, all the liberals are going to say this is not a precedent. And in fact, the reason why Justice Gorsuch narrowed the inquiry the way in which he did is he knew there would be an Establishment Clause violation if in fact he had looked at the broader facts. Now, I'm thinking about this and saying to myself, don't think of this as a legal question first. Think of this as a management question. You know, I've had very little experience in management, a grand total of 4 months and 9 days as a dean running an institution. But the first thing you learn, even in a short period like that, is don't go looking for trouble. If it turns out that everybody seems to be happy with a given arrangement, don't try to intrude on the grounds that there's some larger issue at stake. Wait for somebody to come from the outside. And if it turns out that you get somebody who sues you on the grounds that there's an Establishment Clause violation, then you could talk to the coach and you're actually talking about a real problem, not a hypothetical one. But what you do now is you take a 1 in 100,000 chance and treat that as the reason for doing this whole thing. You get these two long opinions, and then everybody in this constant conspiratorial way starts to see some deeply suspicious motivation on both sides. The liberals are trying to shut down the entire institution of collective action. The conservatives conservatives are basically trying to make sure that religion gets a preferred position in our social life, that whenever you get people praying together, it's always going to be a form of coercion, never a form of voluntary contribution, that we have to stop all of this. Then you get the rumors. Some players said, I didn't really like what the coach did. They say it after the litigation begins. So it's kind of a really sorry tale. The most important lesson to take away from this particular case is it should never have been brought. There have been many situations, the gender bathroom situation 5-6 years ago that took place in Charlotte was another case where a small low-level accommodation can solve everybody's problem without having to have nationwide boycott or the semi-historical discussions on both sides. So this is a case, I think, to be regretted. They took it. I think they had to take it because the man was actually dismissed. And I think that the Gorsuch opinion was probably right insofar as he went there. But I think that the school board really should think twice. And I would urge every future school board in the United States to do the following. Deal with the problems that you have. God knows there are enough difficulties going on in education today. Don't manufacture disputes. If you have a bunch of people who are happy and nobody who's protesting, let the people enjoy the activity, keep their gains, and let everybody else keep their distance. And so it could be.
You point us to Lemon versus Kurtzman, 1971, the three-part establishment clause. This is the Justice Berger writing the decision. I want to check go through the checklist here and see if it applies to this Kennedy versus Bremerton decision. First, the legislation must have a secular purpose, Second, the whatever is decided must neither advance nor inhibit religion. And third, the statute must not foster an excessive government entanglement. I would say on that third, this Kennedy versus Bremerton was unnecessarily entangling the federal government in what you've just said is a practical local matter.
Look, the Lemon test, first of all, it applied to legislation. Whatever you want to say about Mr. Kennedy and his prayers, he's not legislation anything for anybody. And it was a very elaborate program in which what the state tried to do is to finance either teacher salaries or books that would use for secular classes. Let's help the math people and so forth. And what he said is, as far as I can see, that's a neutral purpose. Oddly enough, is the prayer that Mr. Kennedy says a neutral purpose or not? Hard to say. Is it non-denominational? Is it religious? It turns out there's another issue here. Suppose another group wanted to get together and to pray on the football field in a kind of a non-theistic way. Nobody's going to prevent them from doing it, so you don't even know whether there is an imbalance in this particular case. Then the question is, does it inhibit or advance anything? As far as I can tell, it's such a small thing you can't worry about it. And then when you get to the entanglement stuff, the problem that you have with entanglement in the statute is that there's a huge amount of money that's being transferred. That money will free up other money to be used in other ways. There is no way to monitor whether or not in a religious school that the math examples will start to have religious principles built into them in some way or another. Most people think that that Berger went over the top. And it's the same problem we have here. And let me explain. One of the famous cases involving Grand Rapids is Justice Brennan. He says, Todd, there's a real risk of entanglement in this particular case, giving special education and needs for people, for example, who have learning disabilities. These programs have been in place for 7 years. Nobody has reported any kind of a violation. It turns out if you're the Catholic Church and you've got kids who have serious aids and needs and you can't pay for it out of your parochial budget, you will bend over backwards to make sure that you're not going to entangle. You get them for the rest of the day. So what he wants to do is he wants to strike it down, not because of the experience, but because of the possibility. And that's the same thing that's happening here. If you have a track record, rely on the track record. Don't rely on abstract speculations of all the things that could start to go wrong. Now, what happens is Gorsuch gets rid of this test, which is fine as far as I'm concerned. But on the other hand, we have no idea what the new standard is. He's an originalist. Now, one of the problems about originalism is that there are gaps. That is, if you try to look at the way in which the discourse took place in 1787, there was nothing in the Constitution. It was the Bill of Rights. They're talking about an establishment of religion. The operative word in 1791 was Congress. That is, the correct way of reading this particular provision, ironically, was as a federalism provision. We don't want the federal government to establish any religion because states have already established religions. And there are a large number of states with established religion at that time, Massachusetts, Virginia, and a bunch of others. What happens is over time, the states essentially get rid of their established religions, in part because of the sense that it's just inappropriate to have people who are non-believers of another faith have to subsidize a preferred religion. And that argument started to resonate. So there is nothing whatsoever in the Constitution to telling you what the states are supposed to do. And there's certainly nothing whatsoever in the Constitution or in those discussions that deal with this entire question of whether or not private prayer is private or public when it's on public land. So the history is absolutely zero. So he's not really doing originalism because there's nothing you can do with that particular situation. So what he really does is something which is actually quite sensible, and I kind of favor it. The first thing you want to do is to ask whether or not this guy has a serious interest in wanting to pray, and I think the answer would be yes. It's something he likes, it's something that other people like. And then is there a serious reason why the state should be able to shut it down? This is a straight balancing test that you have to invent more or less out of whole cloth because of the novelty of the situation. And I think when you start looking at the back end and trying to figure out what the insidious impacts are going to be of having prayer on the premises, you just can't find anything that's worthy of it. Speculations about liability don't do anything. One or two people saying they're offended doesn't do anything. Because on the other side, when they shut this down, now a dozen indignant parents are going to come up and say, why are you messing around with a football coach who knows what he's doing, is loved by the kids, and you want to shut him down? There's going to be irritation both ways. So that doesn't count for very much. And so in the end, I think what you say is the personal interest is pretty substantial, and the school interest is sort of fragmented. This is standard balancing stuff. It's something which you could say two things about. There's no authorization for balancing in the Constitution. There's no way you can do constitutional law without balancing. And every time you balance, it turns out there are going to be people who disagree on how it ought to take place. And so the thing to understand about originalism, there's certain things it does solve very nicely. You can't pretend under the Commerce Clause that originalism is that Congress could regulate whatever went on in every kind of a state, because the whole structure of the Constitution is designed to partition off the federal government from certain kinds of state activities. But in a case like this, you just don't have those sorts of records. So you get the following sad truth. Originalism works where there's a relatively dense constitutional history. It doesn't work particularly well where the record is extraordinarily sparse. And so if you go back to my commerce example, huge discussions about the importance of having the federal government ability to regulate foreign trade, tariffs and things of that sort, and almost no discussion of the regulation of commerce amongst the several states. And it turns out all the historical action of dramatic consequences to this country is in the domestic area. The foreign area basically has not moved in the slightest bit relative to what you're talking about compared to that time. So originalism is not there. And so the anti-originalist could attack Gorsuch. What he's doing is actually perfectly sensible. But once these tests are put into the place, you can see that the scales will start to shift depending upon whether you have a conservative or a liberal majority.
Professor Richard Epstein, writing at Defining Ideas for the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. When we come back, federalism, the professor's conversation with two interviewers from Ricochet, and the classical liberal in contest with the progressives of the New Deal. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.